Had a chance to talk with Ed Glaser, the Rockland Harbor Master, yesterday. We talked about the impacts of the storm, and now that it's quiet, what took place in the harbor. We talked about Lerman Cove, what's taking place as the wind jammers come to utilize that section of the harbor. And we take a look over at the other side of the harbor, where the former MV&A yacht pier is due to become something else entirely. Then we talked about harbor pollution, Sandy Beach, and what goes on there, followed by a discussion of the Harbor Master Association, how that is doing statewide. Then we take on the fish pier, and what's the latest with the fish pier? Interesting new things going on with that. This is followed by a discussion on the latest with the Rockland Breakwater Lighthouse, and finally, a look at Rockland's economy as a harbor city. And here it is, our interview with Ed Glaser.
I'm down at the Harbor Master office talking with Ed Glaser, who has been our harbor master for some time now and has gotten to know the harbor pretty darn well over the years. How's the harbor right now?
It's quiet.
Yeah?
I mean, it's just about the summer's over.
Well, we had some windstorms. Must have made things kind of loud down
yes.
here.
What was it, the day before Thanksgiving?
Mm-hmm.
Was that Tuesday before Thanksgiving? Yeah, it probably blew. You know, you get to hear all kinds of reports. Some people said it was blowing down St. George or out on Matinicus over 80 miles an hour.
Mm.
And in here, I'd say it was certainly in the 60-mile-an-hour range.
I remember coming down here the day after and seeing a lot of seaweed up on the parking lot.
Yeah, well, it was an easterly, yeah. So it blew right in. At high tide, the stuff would get washed right up here. Yeah.
Didn't flood your building, though.
No, it wasn't the same kind of easterly that we had, whatever it was, the Patriots Day storm. That was due east. This one had enough south in it that it sort of broke it up before it came right in. So it wasn't as hard on the shoreline.
No.
It also, it was interesting, it wasn't as high a high tide. It was a medium high tide, so it wasn't, we didn't have to deal with the astronomical bit of the extra 2 or 3 feet of water that comes at a super high tide.
So, happily, this was an imperfect storm.
Yes.
Okay. Well, then, was there a significant amount of damage if you sort of totted it all up to coastal structures and boats?
No. No. I mean, there were, well, we have 4 boats that washed ashore.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, Miss Patty, blew into a nice quiet place where she scuffed up her bow quite a bit, you know, down low, but they got her off the next morning, and they hauled her out. She's hauled out over at O'Hara's. And there was another boat, the Provider, which is a fishing vessel, and she blew into the cove by the North End Shipyard, and they got her off the next morning.
Just come up on mud?
No, she came up hard on rocks,
but
it was still calm enough where she went up, and once the tide went out, she was, because she went up just about at high tide. So once the tide went out, she was just sat there. So she didn't do that grinding that was really bad for a boat.
Mm.
And she scuffed up her bottom and did some damage, and they've got her. They hauled her right out. And I don't know where she is now because she's not from here. But
Raw Faith seems to have survived these different storms.
Raw Faith always survives. This, you know, she's a good boat.
Well, I'm glad.
And, you know, one of the other boats, the Sarah Kate, is a 65-foot fishing boat that wound up on the rocks over by FMC.
Mm-hmm.
She's probably suffered more damage than most because she sat there for a while. And she's a big enough boat, they still don't know, though she's off of the rocks, they don't know what they're going to do with her now that they've got her.
Mm.
She's just a little bit too big to haul out at O'Hara's or at Knight's Marine.
Now, were these more storms than usual this time of year, if you look back?
This is a heavier storm than we usually have, though it's not abnormal. I think we did better in terms of lobstermen and other boats getting their boats out.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's because lobstering is so bad. People just sort of said, okay, I'm not going to bother lobstering this winter. So there just weren't that many lobster boats out there to worry about. It was certainly, it blew a lot, and it blew hard, but it was from a, not exactly a favorable direction, but it wasn't as bad as it could be for the shore side.
Now, you mentioned lobstermen, as we know, they've been having sales challenges. Is any of that going to reverberate on how the harbor operates or things?
No. No. Lobstermen, though, they use the fish pier.
Mm.
They don't pay, the fish pier is a reasonably priced facility for them. The fish pier makes money, breaks even every year. The bait comes in, the lobstermen land lobsters. There's a few private businesses that lease space there. the lease fees that the fish pier gets are the same whether they're making money or not.
Mm.
I don't think, what do we get? It's like $125 a year from a fisherman to use the pier. So that money is not what's going to break them. I think, what's that, a couple of bushels of bait.
Yeah.
So it's not, that's not what's going to, so as long as you're still fishing, we'll make that money, and it's not going to be a lot of money. I think that as fishermen suffer, as lobstermen don't make money, it's not going to be the town, the fish pier, or the harbor that suffers. It's going to be every business in town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it is that kind of economic
secondary. Multiplier. Yeah. Every car place, Hamilton Marine, the Midcoast Marine, all the supply places, mm-hmm. everybody that sells traps is going to suffer. Yeah.
Mm. All those. Huh.
But it's not necessarily going to hurt the waterfront. You know, our budget doesn't really rely on them.
Right, right, okay. Well, let's go on to another topic here then, and that is cruise ships. Rockland's become a pretty good success at attracting cruise ships over the years. And
we haven't done that much. We are blessed. There's an absolutely marvelous woman by the name of Amy Powers who's tied up with this Cruise Maine Coalition, mm-hmm. and they're funded in part by the state of Maine and in part by 16 different towns or whatever it is, that I'll chip in some money to keep her. And she's sort of a lobbyist for Maine ports.
Mm-hmm.
And she's done an excellent job sort of gathering information and attracting vessels to all of the ports in Maine. As some of the towns like Bar Harbor or Portland have grown in the number of cruise ships that come in, they need other places to go. And so they sort of look down the list of places that can handle a big cruise ship, and they've settled on, some of them have settled on Rockland, and that's, we have two of them scheduled for next year. We'll see how that goes.
Do you know what the biggest ones are that are being, that may be coming in?
The biggest one right now, I think, is the Jewel of the Seas, and she's like 961 feet long or something like that, with 2,500 passengers and another 700 crew. I mean, they're big boats.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
their schedule is they come in at 8 o'clock in the morning and leave at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So they'll just hit town. A lot of them will come ashore, go on buses, go up to Mount Batty or go to a lobster bake. And they say only like, I don't remember what the numbers are, and it depends on how attractive the town is,
mm-hmm.
but only 50% of the people on board the boat go ashore to start off with. And then half of those go on these bus trips. So they'll just get on the buses and go away. And then the other half, so we might have, you know, 500 people extra in town for a day.
Well, it is a nice flush of capital largesse, I would think.
Yeah, but we're still only talking about 2 days out of the whole, you know, year.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be enough for any business to say, oh, now everything downtown is going to become a T-shirt store. We already have T-shirt stores, you know, mm-hmm. and tchotchke stores, so I suspect that some of those will make a little bit of money from it.
Are any of the water taxis active, taking people out to the lighthouse from the cruise ships?
There aren't at the moment. One of the problems is the cruise ships have to figure out how to deal with this many passengers. Get them off, get them on, do it quickly. So one of the small boats that can take 6 passengers to take people out to the cruise ship, so the lighthouse, is really not going to be worth the cruise ship's time and money investing in. Now,
mm-hmm.
it may be that some small launch will come to the public landing at the same time and offer cruise ship trips,
mm-hmm.
you know, or lighthouse trips
right.
for the cruise ship passengers. And that's certainly a market that some towns have. The smaller cruise ships that come on a regular basis, the American Star and the American Glory, American Cruise Lines, when they come in, they tie up right at the public landing. They don't tender people back and forth,
mm-hmm.
and they stay for a whole day. Those passengers, there's only 100 passengers on the whole ship.
Mm-hmm.
Those passengers will wander uptown and go to the Farnsworth and go shopping uptown. But they also, those passengers will go for day sales on boats. They'll do Captain Jack and go on lobster cruises. You know, see how a real Maine lobsterman lobsters
actually pull up traps
yeah.
and bait them and all
yeah.
that.
Huh? You know, I think he just leaves the lobsters in so he can keep pulling the same ones up and down.
So I want to make sure they're not fiberglass made by the same guy who makes the big...
Yeah, so it's those Korean fiberglass lobsters. Yeah, but I mean, in terms of impact, I think what we're really going to have from the big cruise ships is really a visual impact.
Mm.
These things are big. You remember when the Wasp was in here, the baby aircraft carrier for the Lobster Festival? That was 900 feet long. So it's on that same scale of vessel it's going to be, and you're going to be able to see this thing towering over the harbor. It's really going to be quite something.
Well, it'd be something good for the Chamber of Commerce to use promoting, I suppose.
Well, we have two ships for 2009 that have signed up, and three ships for 2010. So it may be a growth industry, because if you go from zero to two within two to three, that's quite a bit. But it's not like we're not at Bar Harbor where we have two of these ships every single day all summer long.
Mm. But that's important, but it's not really hugely significant in our economy right now.
No. No, I mean, I think we need to change our fee structure so we make a little bit more money from those big cruise ships just because of the number of passengers.
Let's go to the smaller cruise ships, though. Dredging is progressing over in the cove there, Lerman's Cove?
Yes.
Aren't a number of windjammers going to use it?
Yeah, the dredging should be just about done. The floats are being built by Shed City in Warren. Brock is lined up to put in the pilings. What other work has to go on there will be done by spring. So we have at least three schooners now that are part of a group that will be leasing the facility. The facility is being put in by the Rockland Port District, which is a semi-quasi-governmental organization.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, no tax dollars are going directly to it because the lease fees will pay for the whole thing. But the three schooners that are over there will probably find that the lease amount is more than they want to pay by themselves. So they're going to try to find another schooner or another traditional boat of some sort to share it with them.
Mm. Now, it seems like there are several options right now for schooners here. You've got your North End. You've got the area next to, well, formerly MB&A, I guess.
Yeah, they're one of the reasons the schooners are going into Lerman's Cove is because the former MB&A, Bank of America, Stuart Smith property, they really don't want the schooners there anymore.
Hmm.
So it's not available for schooners.
Does that mean that we're going to end up with Bank of America yachts instead of MB&A yachts coming in?
Well, Bank of America no longer owns it. That whole
piece
of property was sold to a group of investors, including Stuart Smith from Camden, and who are some of the other people? Matt Simmons, who rebuilt the Strand Theater, and a couple of other investors who are summer people in Rockport, basically. So
people with some background in the area, then.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there are people who understand, especially somebody like Stuart, who has some idea of what makes an attractive New England facility.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we have to worry about it blossoming into something we really don't want right away. But I don't think we're going to see yachts that are company-owned yachts in there. We may see some private yachts, and there are plans that are underway to build a marina in that cove. But at this point, with the economy the way it is, I don't see that that's going to happen right away.
That sounds like there'd be a significant amount of dredging there, certainly.
The first set of plans don't require any dredging because it was dredged when MB&A built it. If they keep going further down the road, yes, mm-hmm. they'll need some dredging.
It'd be impressive to see it go all the way to along where the catwalk goes along the coast there. Dredge it in like that. But
yeah, I don't know that, you know, there's only so much dredging you can do before, you know, the reason the coast is the way it is because there's usually something underneath that thin veneer of mud.
Right, and of course, as we know, beneath the thin veneer of mud around here is likely to be old windjammers, old...
Well, in many cases, it's just ledge. There's also, as you're aware, in some of these coves like that, there are eelgrass issues, so that there are DEP issues that keep it from being easy to just dredge without destroying some of the environment.
How is the harbor as far as pollution discharges? Do we have any that are doing direct discharges? I mean, FMC discharges warm water, but that's just
There are few issues that are outstanding. As you know, Sandy Beach, through Terry Pinto and Wastewater Treatment, they've been testing the water for a couple of years, mm-hmm. and the state of Maine has declared it a healthy beach. So it's perfectly legal for swimming.
Well, kudos to the sewage treatment plant, then. They've done a great
right.
job.
Yeah, I mean, Terry spearheaded this whole thing. And so now we have a beach that people have always swum there, but the state didn't allow it. Now it's a perfectly legal beach for swimming. It's wonderful. Some of that has to do with more and more boats using their holding tanks. Mm-hmm. Some of it has to do with having no direct outflow from the city waste lines or sewer lines. Some of it has to do with the way that some of it is, unfortunately, that there isn't as much fishing industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you remember, the fishing industry used to just take the heads and tails and throw them over.
Oh, right, right.
You know, and so that stuff's gone. So the harbor in general is much cleaner than it's ever been. Probably almost has been since the the 1800s when they had the lime kilns on the shore.
Right.
And they had, you know. So I think it's much cleaner than it was. There are still a few issues. I guess the cement barges and the cement plant have some kind of a effluent that they use in the harbor. And it's not a lot, but it still is some. I think they have a temporary fix for it so that they're not doing it right now. And anything they can find a temporary fix for, I think, should become a permanent fix.
Hmm. There's been enough citizen concern about that to move things along, which I think is as it's supposed to be.
Yeah. I mean, it sometimes you get the feeling somebody's going to try to sneak something by or under, and as long as there's some light shown on it,
mm-hmm.
people will know about it and make some stink, as it were.
Right, and then the smoke clears, and they've done whatever they're supposed to.
Yeah. So for the most part, it's much better than it's been. There are still occasionally issues of fishing boats that will accidentally or tend to accidentally jump, you know, dead fish overboard.
Mm.
But in some ways, that's still a nice, simple, organic material that, because we have so much tide, we'll go back out to sea without much in the way of water.
Right, we're not talking about complicated hydrocarbons or
right.
chlorine.
Heavy metals, or, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, now, what's going on with the Harbor Masters Association? That's an association that's been around quite a while. And
we were just trying to figure it out. The Harbor Masters Association has been in existence for, I think we figured, 24 years. Next year's going to be the 25th anniversary of the Maine Harbor Masters Association. And we plan on having a real big party with trips to Hawaii and, you know.
Oh, sure.
Nothing better than a whole
bunch of trips to Maine Maritime Academy.
Oh, okay. Maine Harbor Masters Association was founded in an attempt to raise the professional level of harbor masters. Most of the harbor masters in Maine are part-time.
Mm.
Or else they're a member of the police department or the fire department. There are a few that I would say are a little more professional than that in the sense that they work full-time. Some of them are just full-time in the summer, and some of them are full-time all year long.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big knowledge gap between somebody who's just a part-timer and somebody who works full-time. And to improve, you know, sometimes it's lip service, but when you go to a conference with the Coast Guard, they'll always talk about how important the Harbor Masters are and how they turn to the Harbor Masters for local knowledge and all this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all fine and well for them to say that, but if we as Harbor Masters can't back that up. So what we've been doing is every year we have a training for 3 days in Castine at the Maine Maritime Academy that covers from the beginning stuff all the way to more advanced issues, whether it's GIS mapping or state law or legal issues. We try to cover a lot of things in a short time. And my take on it is that the higher the professional level of harbor masters in general, the more seriously we'll be taken.
Mm. And well, I was going to say, how many harbor masters?
There are 150 towns in Maine or something like that that have harbor masters.
Well, yeah.
So there's a lot. We usually get around 70 or so come to the harbor master training.
Well, that sounds like a pretty good number. Are there any freshwater harbor masters?
Yes. Yes, Maine also has a great ponds ordinance or state law. What is that? Subchapter 12 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it covers, it parallels what goes on the coast. But towns can also have a harbor master for inland lakes.
But that person goes through the same sort of licensing process?
Yeah. Yes, they're supposed to also be trained harbor masters.
Mm.
They have a lot of the same issues.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't as many of them. You know, Naples, Sebago Lake, those places have them. And almost any town can have them if there's enough demand for it. And in some towns, the coastal harbor master also worries about the inland lakes, too.
How about you? Do you worry about our
water supply? We have not had any real demand for that over there. You know, Chickawaukee, because we share it with Rockport, hasn't really had any demands for a harbor master.
Just basically a swimming attendant.
Yeah. I mean, well, we have the recreational department takes care of the park and worries about between Aquamaine worrying about water quality and the rec department and them worrying about the overflow and public works.
Mm-hmm.
They really don't need another hand sticking their finger in
there. Okay. I was interested, it seemed that that Coastal Enterprises is embarking on something with the Rockland Fish Pier.
A few years ago, the city was given the fish pier by the state. And through grants, through ship grants, they built the fish pier. After a while, it became necessary to figure out how to run the fish pier. So a few private individuals were given, the city took proposals from different individuals and would lease the pier to them by the year with some agreement, however much was supposed to go back to the city, and they were supposed to, the town took care of some of the maintenance and the operator took care of some of the maintenance. Well, after a few different operators who didn't pay the city and the maintenance not getting done, the fish pier was basically taken over by the city.
Mm.
In the process of doing that, they hired Coastal Enterprises to put together a proposal on how the fish pier should be run. There are a number of recommendations about how the fees should be structured, how the finances for the fish pier should be done. And one of the things that they recommended was that the fish pier have its own management authority. You know, a group of, including fishermen, businessmen, somebody from town, should all sit around and on a regular basis revisit all the issues, come up with a budget. I think the city still would approve the budget, but most of the day-to-day management would be between a fish pier manager and this authority.
Kind of like a mini version of the Harbor Committee?
Yes. It might have a little more legal authority. It might be more like the port district, you know, like a port authority. And I guess a lot of towns in Maine have that for their fish pier. When it went to the city council approved a lot of the recommendations, the fee structure, the fee amounts, the use of the fish pier, but they reserved the management of the fish pier to themselves. They didn't create this fish pier authority. And so as an offshoot of that, management of the fish pier has sort of fallen to the Harbor Management Commission. The Harbor Management Commission really doesn't know that much about the fish pier. And personally, I have enough other stuff to do without worrying too much about the day-to-day management of the fish pier.
Mm-hmm.
So the fish pier is sort of like an orphan out there. What Coastal Enterprises, from our standpoint, what Coastal Enterprises suggested still makes a lot of sense. So the Harbor Management Commission has voted to ask the city council to revisit the issue and see if they're willing to create a fish pier authority. So there's nothing new here.
What's that? Was that recently?
Yeah, at our last meeting. So I have to put together a package to submit to the city council to see if they'll reconsider it.
No, as far as I know right now, by speaking with the fish pier manager, their entire budget is made up from fees. They're revenue neutral as far as the tax burden of the city.
Yes, and that's an important part of the fish pier. It breaks even. It sets aside some money for maintenance and some money in a reserve account if they have a good year.
Mm-hmm.
One of the problems is the fish pier could use a long-term management plan. And one of the ways to do that is to get a lot of people involved in that. And one of the ways to do that is to have a fish pier authority.
Right. Let's have a structure.
We have things that we need to do. There are too many fish bait coolers on the fish pier. They're in violation of floodplain rules. So we need to find a way to take care of that. We need to apply for grant monies if they're available. There's a lot of things that to ask somebody like a fish pier manager to do is too much.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody could say to me, yeah, he does day-to-day management, he does maintenance, he does all of those things, but he's not going to also have the expertise to go after those grants.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, maybe I should be doing that too, but I'm already going for Homeland Security grants for down here, and I'm going for grants for improvement of, you know, and then there's the day-to-day doing permits and the day-to-day, all these other issues. To ask me to also do the fish pier long-term planning is more than I really have the time or the energy to. So getting some kind of a fish pier authority from my standpoint would really could potentially solve some of the issues that are outstanding at the fish pier.
Could this be done in such a way it's still not an added fiscal burden on the city?
Oh, it would never be a fiscal burden. No, the point is, this would be like all of these other authorities or commissions, they're volunteers.
Mm.
And the point would be, if anything, to manage the money that comes in better. You know, and to spend, I mean, we have this resource that is the fish pier. And it needs to be taken care of, and it needs to be maintained, and it needs to have a long-term plan where somebody says, this area is the next area that has to get dredged. It's going to cost $40,000 to dredge this. How do we get that money? Let's see if we can work on that.
So they can do strategic planning, and they can do...
yeah, that's what they call it. Yeah.
Well, have a strategy, folks. Yeah. Okay,
yeah.
Now, one thing, looking out your window here, of course, the centerpiece of the view is the Rockland Lighthouse. What's going on with that? I know that it's run by an independent operation. Are they holding weddings out there or anything like that?
No. I don't think they are. The lighthouse is through the main lights program was given to the city of Rockland. And the city of Rockland has contracted basically with the Friends of the Rockland Breakwater to run it. And so they've invested quite a bit of money. They've hired quite a few contractors. They're restoring it to its, I don't know if it's original condition, but it's some slice through its time.
Mm.
And they go over there on weekends, and they work on it, and they've cleaned it up, and they're doing a beautiful job.
My goodness.
They've got a little gift store in there, so if you go out and walk out, you can buy a t-shirt or a sweatshirt that helps pay for the restoration of the lighthouse, and you can take tours of the lighthouse.
Now, they did also get permission to have a float out there, too,
They have a float so people can bring boats out there. A lot of people go out there and fish off of the float. Hmm. But, I mean, there are boats that come out there. You know, it is a nice long walk out to the breakwater. Oddly enough, the breakwater doesn't belong to the citizens of Rockland. It belongs to the federal government.
Well, I'm sure in the end that makes things like a lot easier for the city of Rockland.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to have to do the maintenance on it, but they don't do a lot of maintenance on it anyhow.
Well, I also understand that they get, I don't know how many sprained ankle complaints a year, et cetera. But, you know, all they can do is shrug it off, go, well.
Well, there's a sign up there at the end that says, you know, pass at your own risk.
Yeah.
The question when you say something like that is how much is your own risk and how much is just... You just go on the assumption that it's going to be flat.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, if you're not speaking English, is it a trilingual warning sign?
As long as it's not in Braille.
Well, maybe there's an international symbol for caught, you know, for breakwater with person tripping. What the hell not to do that?
Yeah.
Okay, well, anyway, though, your morale sounds good. Do you think things are going to work out well?
What do you mean work out well? They're going well.
They're going well.
They're going well. Things are going great. You look at the financial predictions for the coming year. I think Rockland has been fairly fortunate in this last summer. We didn't suffer a lot of decline in the tourist industry. What's going to happen this shopping season, who the heck knows.
Mm.
But if the economy stays the way it is, I suspect that next summer is when we'll really start feeling effects of an economic downturn.
Mm.
And so how that affects the harbor, it certainly affects lobstermen, because if people don't feel like they have money, they're not going to buy lobster.
And if these guys can't sell their lobster, they're not going to be making investments in their own livelihoods.
Right.
Okay.
And if people aren't going downtown and going to the stores, going to the restaurants, all of a sudden you start seeing less and less income for everybody in town. Then you start seeing a slowdown.
Interesting, because it's in our city, because lobstering is sort of a distant event, people don't tend to realize the importance of lobstering to our city economy.
Well, if you work at a convenience store and you're making a little bit above minimum wage, it doesn't matter how hard you work, and they work very hard. You know, I think they should get paid a lot more, because I go to one convenience store in the morning and get a cup of coffee, and there's somebody working there, and I go to a different one in the afternoon, and that same person is working. She's got to have two jobs just to make ends meet.
Mm.
But no matter how much she makes or how many hours she works, she's still only making, $25,000, $30,000 a year at best, right? So her impact on the economy is not that great.
Mm.
If you get a lobsterman and he's having a good year and he's bringing in $100,000, his impact on the economy is three times what hers is. So if he takes a hit on his income, it's going to have a bigger ripple effect on the economy.
Right. I mean, she might even find herself down to one job because of that.
Right. So it's just because of the size of the income that they're used to making. Maybe they bought a new truck every couple of years. Maybe he bought a new engine for his boat. All of a sudden, the ripples are greater than their number.
Hmm. I always presumed any threat to the lobster industry would come by disease or somehow loss of the product.
It's amazing. Everybody was so worried this spring that, oh my God, there won't be enough lobsters, or there won't be enough bait, or fuel is going to be so expensive. Nobody ever expected that the problem would be that they had too much supply of lobsters and no place to sell it. It's the exact opposite of what we're expecting.
Well, that's economics for you. Now, finally, what's coming up next in terms of Harbor Park or any kind of events? Are there any winter events?
Only one that we usually have is down at Snow Marine Park in the middle of the winter.
Appropriate.
Is the Winter Carnival, and I don't know that I have the date right here. But it's in the middle of the winter, and it's the Rotary puts on a winter carnival every year. You know, sled down the hill and go ice skating and get shot out of a slingshot on the ice.
All that fun stuff.
Yeah.
That was great.
So.
Okay, we'll look forward to it. Hey, thank you very much.
You're welcome.